It's time to focus on what drives e-commerce results. It's time for Browse Basket Buy.
Welcome, everybody, to Browse Basket Buy, the podcast / webinar series that knows that forecasting rain on your wedding day is neither good nor ironic. Joining me today is John Redman. Hi, John.
Hi, Dan. Thanks for having me on.
No problem at all. Now, rather than me, what I like to do, rather than me mangling your backstory and giving people erroneous information, why don't you just give everybody a quick intro to yourself?
Yeah, so I'm John Redman, CEO and founder of a business called Modo25, which is a digital marketing business that's built a platform called AskBosco. And AskBosco helps brands and retailers connect all their data into one place and then predict the future of where they should be spending their money. And I've been in digital marketing a long time, Dan. I started off in direct mail, helping people with postcodes. So typing in postcodes and returning an address. At the time, people would probably say that was AI now. That was like magic. That was a business called QAS. And then went into the inbox with email marketing and then got into the search box with search marketing. And yeah, but so I've been in and around e-commerce probably since before e-commerce was e-commerce. So I've got lots of interesting stories and now we're helping people try and work out where to spend their money.
Another podcast on interesting past stories. When I first started, we were still doing fax marketing and stuff like that. I feel like people need to hear these stories of what it was like in the old days when we used to use those.
I was trying to explain to my SDRs the other day that we used to have to photocopy each morning leads from the yellow pages, and then we'd pick up a phone and dial thing. So they were like, "Well, why didn't you just go on LinkedIn?" And I was like, but there was no LinkedIn. And we used to share a computer. And my boss used to sit at his desk smoking as well. So that ages me.
Well, the old days, yeah, people just driving to, we would look up where somewhere was and we'd call them, or we'd just drive there and go and speak to them. That's a random. Yeah. And so that's the past. So today we're going to be talking about predicting the future, forecasting. So let's begin at the beginning. When people are planning, budgeting, forecasting, particularly in e-commerce, a lot of it is done on gut feel or various notions and ideas people have. So what is going wrong there? What should people really be doing to forecast properly?
Well, I think there's loads of... Sometimes people start and go, "Oh, we've got a revenue target of X. Right, how are we going to get to X?" But I also think it's got really complicated because... I often talk about it as like this love triangle of distrust in media planning and buying. Is you've got the brand, fundamentally they want to spend the right amount of money to hit their targets, but then they might have an agency involved somewhere and they've got different motivations and different targets, and both are probably getting a mixed message from the media's owners, so Google, for instance. So if you go, I don't know if you've ever been for a meeting with Google, Dan, but if you go for a meeting with Google, the answer is normally, spend more money on Google. Yeah. Or if they're being subtle, they might say, "Oh, have you heard about these new campaigns we're doing on YouTube? You should invest some more money in YouTube." And the same would be if you went to speak to Meta. Meta will say, "Spend more money on Meta and TikTok, et cetera, et cetera." So there's this completely conflicted and confused messages. And a lot of people will look at, well, the top-down approach happens in so many brands. Well, we did this last year. We want to grow by X. Right, that's the plan. And they're not necessarily looking at where the potential headroom is or what actually is the total potential that they could sell. Right. So I've been involved in businesses helping people with digital due diligence on, like I say, a scale-up D2C brand. And everybody's like, "Well, it's just going to keep growing forever." And I'm like, "But if it keeps growing forever, everybody's going to have the product, and it can't possibly keep growing forever. They need to either invent more products or invent more depth or do something different. You can't just keep going forever." So I think sometimes it's just happened through history where people have gone, "Oh, we need to grow by 10%. So somebody at the top level gets given a target, hands that to the CMO, hands that to the digital team, who then say to the agency, "We need to grow by X." And then everybody goes off and starts pulling all the different levers to try and work out how to do that. And I also think a lot of people have just been getting obsessed with ROAS. And we've come from a world, Dan, over the last 10, 15 years. And some of this is performance marketing's fault, right? But you could spend £1 and make £10 on Google shopping. So we keep spending pounds. And actually, I think we've all got really addicted to the bottom of the funnel. And then Google needs to make more money because it wants to invent the future of AI with Gemini, and it wants to keep making a profit whilst it's doing that. So Google puts the cost of the auction up so it can make more money. And then suddenly everybody's competing at the bottom of the funnel, and it's just getting really hard. And overlay on top of that, we can't track everything anymore. So we used to be able to track it boom, 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 all the way through, and people would have some sort of last click win models, and it was sort of fine. And the CFO, and I suppose the other thing to compound this, Dan, that's become a challenge, is the CFOs and the CEOs have got used to, well, we spend that on Google, this happens, just keep doing that. And we can't just keep doing that anymore because we can't measure everything, because the amount of untracked revenue we're now seeing is just increasing and increasing and increasing. And the discrepancies between platforms claiming credit for things is increasing. And that's down to privacy. That's down to tracking issues. That's down to sort of different browsers having different rules, different devices. So phones having different tracking, different things. So the whole view of, oh, well, we'll just get an attribution model that works is becoming harder. And I think people are trying to get their head around that. And years ago, when you were doing fax marketing and people were advertising on TV, you did your advert on the TV and then you waited to see if someone came in your shop. And then after 3 or 6 months, you'll go, well, we spent all this money on TV. Sales went up. That worked great. Whereas I think we've got so used to being able to measure absolutely everything, we just expect that to happen. That said, though, with big data, machine learning and AI, you can still measure and forecast and track a lot of stuff. So I suppose what we see a lot of, to answer the question, is the sort of top-down growth, rather than someone going and looking, saying, well, why don't we look in the data and see what could we do?
Yeah.
Right. Because the question shouldn't be, we want to grow by 10%, go and put me a media plan to grow by 10%, is like, well, how much could we grow and how much would you need to spend to hit that growth within these acceptance tolerances, either on profit or margin or whatever? Because if it was all just about ROAS, you might make the wrong decisions and you might end up selling the wrong things that aren't necessarily making the most profit. So, I think you almost need to start with a bottom-up approach and go, right, well, where's the opportunity? So the answer is it's hard and it's complicated.
Yeah. I was going to say, before we get into what you can do, which we'll get into in a second, is there just an element where people need to be a bit more comfortable in a more complicated and slightly messier world? Is that fair to say?
Well, I think we probably need to empower and educate and I think agencies do know all this. But I think agencies have found it hard, as to heads of digital, to educate the CFOs and the CEOs that the world has changed and that now we might not know everything and we've got to look at different ways of measuring things and different ways. Because if you just believed what Google Analytics says, you wouldn't spend any money on Facebook.
Yeah.
Right? It says Facebook doesn't work. But then if you spend the money on Facebook, sales start coming in, but can you, and Facebook will also be claiming all the other sales as well. So, I think people need to re-educate them into how all these channels are interplaying with each other and really be looking at a sort of full funnel effect. And I also think a lot of people because it's been so easy to do performance marketing over the years, they've forgotten how to do proper creative, proper copywriting, proper above the funnel brand building, because they've not had to do that. Because the performance element of let's just buy the traffic at the last click and at the bottom of the funnel has been working. So I think there's going to be a real shift this year where people are going to have to really think about better full funnel marketing across the whole piece. But that makes them nervous because they might spend X on, I don't know, out of home or video, and it's not going to instantly put money in the till. That makes people nervous.
Indeed. And so, yeah, what we need in order really is a better picture of what's actually going on that allows people to make better decisions. And on that topic, we talk a lot at Redlifter about predictive analytics and the fact that you can start to be able to see what's going on. And that allows you to start forecasting and predicting the future a bit better. So what does that look like from your perspective, from the forecasting perspective? How can predictive analytics kind of help to start solving that problem?
Well, I think the big thing is, and a really good maths person with a massive spreadsheet could probably work out. And I think the challenge now is people have got so many products, they've got so many campaigns, potentially advertising in so many different channels. There's just a huge amount of data to sift through and try and work out, like, well, where is that nugget of opportunity? And then you sort of overlay on that the different demands of running your day-to-day operation, your day-to-day business. Often people are very reactive, right? Sales are down, right? Stick some more money in this or stick some more money in that. And so that sometimes maybe they react and press the wrong levers. But it's sort of looking at it from a point of view of, and I think the other bit which people often ignore is a lot of the ad platforms now are suggesting they can just spend your money for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. And this is adding in. So you've got this sort of, well, Google just says we should give this much money to Google, give me a target and it will go spend my money. All right. And that sounds amazing. And a lot of these things aren't bad, but that in my mind is a bit like putting the 8-year-old in charge of the sweet shop.
Yeah.
Right. Because they're going to eat all the sweets that they can get away with eating. And actually, is there a better way to do it? And actually, is it all best in Google? Or is some of it better in TikTok? Or is some of it better in Facebook? So I suppose what is available now with predictive analytics and big data is being able to run multiple scenarios and being able to crunch loads of data in a way that was just not possible before, at a speed that just wasn't possible or practical before. Or you'd need a PhD data scientist and a massive computer, whereas most brands don't have the budget or the gift of having an in-house PhD data scientist to do that. So what I suppose the current suites of different tools give you is the ability to crunch all those numbers, run scenarios, and potentially come up with models that you can then discuss with the CFO or the CMO around, well, hang on, if we did this, we think this is going to happen. If we did this, we think this is going to happen. And again, I remember years ago when we were first into sort of pay-per-click marketing, it was like, give us 10 grand, we'll spend it and see what happens. Right. And that's hard to get a client to do that now, right? You still might have the odd test budget and you might have a bit to do with like new creative or new campaigns, but people expect you now to know the answer. Right. Well, if we do that, what's going to happen?
Yeah.
And I suppose predictive analytics now gives you a bit of a lens on the future. Of, well, we, based on years of historical data that we can train it on, we believe if you do this, this, and this, this is what's going to happen, and this is how you should split it all up. So it should give people confidence to have those robust conversations and hopefully re-educate the CFOs, and then they can stand by. And then hopefully when they do make those changes, it actually works, and then they build up the confidence and they build up more data, and the systems just get better and better.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think the really interesting part about this, and we talk about this a lot as well, is where that decision and making ends up being. And as you say, that all the platforms now, really interestingly, and I think this is slightly an AI thing as well, is they're trying to say like, well, we can make the decisions for you as well. We can process the data and make the decisions. Whereas, you know, it's about where that decision is made and how well informed people are when they can make that decision about what they should be doing next in their business to drive growth.
So our view currently, and I say currently because it may change, is the machine learning and the big data and the AI are fantastic at helping you do lots of analysis really quickly. I'm not comfortable yet to put it in automatic mode and just let it go off and spend the money on Google or let it go off and spend the money on Facebook because there's nuances that it still doesn't know. And the other thing we're sort of testing out at the moment, and as you know, we work a lot with e-commerce people. So, well, we're looking at, well, how can we sell more stuff quicker, faster?
And what did we sell yesterday? And what can we learn from what we sold yesterday to what we're going to sell tomorrow? But often that's not necessarily factoring in stock availability. That's not necessarily factoring in like margin or what's actually in the warehouse. And is a better question if you've got all this data plugged in together. So if you've got a product that's going to sell out in 4 weeks anyway, at its current pace, you should probably reduce the budget and put the price up a bit because you're going to run out of them anyway. But often the marketing team don't have access to all that sort of stock data and price data because that's sat in a different system somewhere else. But you might have loads of, I don't know, black trainers left, and actually you're not pushing black trainers hard enough because the metrics on the advertising side would say, but actually if we got rid of all those black trainers, we'd monetize all that cash that's tied up in the warehouse. So I think over time now, the smart retailers will be connecting up all their stock data with all their marketing data all in one place, and then really leveraging the power that these sorts of tools can give you.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we talk about that as well. Understanding the customers and the visitors and the people, you know, that you're trying to sell to and market to, your stock and what's going on internally. But also, and the other element, I think, is those external factors. Like we've heard a lot in the last, you know, 6 months to a year about things like tariffs and things that cause lots of issues externally, which affect your business and you need to be able to respond to and would affect things like forecasts. So they add in a whole extra level of that as well. And knowing about those and how those will impact your business is really important too.
And I also think some of the you've got to be, the way there's lots of different black box models out there. And some people think, because we expose and we'll tell anybody how all our stuff works. And I think you need to be confident in how it works and what it's actually doing. And then you'll start building up the trust in it. Whereas there's some models out there that will just, oh, well, we can't quite work that out. So we'll just make it up. And if it's sort of, as long as it just works and we get away within an acceptable tolerance, people will keep doing it. And I think a lot of the ad platforms are getting away with that as well. But over time, as budgets get tighter, which they definitely are, margins are getting harder. As you talked about, it's getting more expensive for people to make stuff, ship stuff, get it to the country. And then it's becoming more expensive to advertise. It's the consumers don't want to pay more. So it's the brands in the middle that are getting squeezed.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So if we think very much about what's happening inside e-commerce brands at the moment, when you do start to work with an e-commerce brand, you start to look at their marketing budgets. Where do you tend to find the biggest leaks and waste? Are there places that tends to congregate in places you'd focus to try and make it better?
How long have we got?
As long as you need, Jim.
Yeah, brilliant. First of all, we've got to understand how they are defining success and have they actually thought about the full funnel. So the biggest thing we see is, and this is probably not where you thought the conversation was going, but the biggest thing we see when we analyze the data, and this is sort of a big opportunity for people in 2026 and beyond, is there's an over-reliance on PPC, right? So there's an over-reliance on Google Shopping and PPC, full stop. And I can show you, we analyzed billions of rows of data, and best practice would say you want 60% organic traffic or direct traffic, 40% paid. Most people you look at is the other way around, if not worse. And then you look at the cost per visit for, say, a PPC, and then you look at the cost per visit for an SEO. If you actually took the amount of time and effort they spend on content or an SEO agency or other bits and bobs, and people are massively underinvesting in SEO. And I think that's maybe because in the past people got nervous about Google updates, about link building or buying links or black hat SEO and all these other terms that, and they've sort of potentially stopped doing it or just think, I'll just do an annual technical update. The reason this is now important and more so important, and is going to become even more important in 2026, is how people research and buy things is changing. So the opportunity to, if you reduced, you could analyze all your PPC and say, well, actually, which one is really adding the right amount of money at a campaign level? Well, if we pause those, we'll probably get those sales anyway. So analyzing what is working on PPC where you don't rank on SEO sounds a really simple thing to do, but requires probably two teams, maybe two agencies to all sit down and collaborate and go, well, all these keywords work really well on PPC. We're selling loads of stuff. But actually, we're not even on the first two pages of Google. But more worryingly, we're not even getting any featured citations in any of the LLMs when people are doing research. Mm-hmm. So the massive missed opportunity. So I would say where we need to start is analyzing what's working on PPC or paid, and then where aren't we on SEO, and actually is there an opportunity, and then what should you do that? That would be the content strategy, link building strategy, digital PR, whatever it is they need to invest in to do. But also, Google recently announced with Shopify this universal commerce protocol, so this UCP thing. So soon people will go on to Gemini, or they'll go on to ChatGPT and they'll do their research, and then there'll be just a buy now button. So there'll be, these are the top black trainers in your size. These are based on your criteria. These ones are available. This is the price point. And then normally you'd go and find that website and buy your shoes. Whereas now, you just have to buy the shoes directly inside the LLM. And if you've already got a shop pay account, they'll just turn up at your house. And then in the analytics, you just have a zero impression, zero click, zero cost sale, which is very exciting.
Yeah.
But also, how do you optimize for that? And how do you measure that? But to go back to your original question, the biggest thing we see is people are over-indexing and over-reliant on paid, and there isn't enough balance in their marketing. And then I suppose the other thing we see a lot is people have sort of aren't investing enough in the top of the funnel. So, and you can see that because, again, the amount of money people are just spending on shopping or on PPC as a percentage of what they're spending maybe in Facebook or programmatic or video, they're not building their brand. They haven't necessarily got a story. They are literally just trying to sell product. And it might be working now, but I would say in 6-12 months time, because of everything else is going on, they need to spend some time and money investing in the upper funnel, either whether that's content on SEO or whether that's brand building on programmatic or Facebook or TikTok or the sort of more interactive media. And I think the gift we've all got now, which the biggest reason people don't do YouTube advertising, isn't the cost of the YouTube clicks or the YouTube impressions. It's the cost to produce the videos. And now with some of the clever AI, if you'd have asked me this question before Christmas, I said it's not good enough. It's not ready yet. But some of the AI video generation you can do now could really turbocharge brands who don't have the big budgets to produce video ads, who could potentially produce video ads. But yeah, everybody's still addicted to Google, and we need to wean them off that addiction. And all the data would tell us that. But again, it's people are struggling to put the business case to the board to say we need to invest in all this stuff. And we don't, it might take us 3 to 6 months until we get a return. And everybody goes, oh, just spend all money on Google.
Yeah.
It's a bit like the instant hit of a bar of chocolate versus eating the healthy meal.
Delicious chocolate. I do like the idea of doing a pull quote from this, which is John Redmond says, got off Google. I think that's a great.
Yeah. Google stealing your money. Stop Google stealing your money.
It's punchy. It's punchy.
We're a Google premium partner. I can't. You can put that out there. They know I say that all the time.
There we go. So what you've almost kind of started describing there is a scenario. And we talked about this is about scenario planning and understanding. So is that how it would end up looking? You know, when you typically work with a brand and you say, like, here are some different scenarios, what do those tend to look like? How do those tend to work and give someone something actionable that they can then use?
Well, I suppose there's the biggest thing is a lot of people go through and tweak and change and things iterate over time. But the way you should start building up your scenarios, as you said before, people get given a target and they've got to increase sales or they've got to then forecast a plan out. So you might have an overarching plan, but then also you might have specific targets or specific requirements or budget constraints for certain products or certain brands or certain categories. And historically, you'd have to be in the ad platform doing all of that manually. So you'd have to be going into the ad platform, changing all your bids, changing all your strategies, or, and that would be maybe Google ads over here or Meta ads over here. And fundamentally, it takes a lot of time and effort, or you press the auto stuff in the ad platforms and let their AI do it. So what we're trying to do is take all that data out of the ad platforms, analyze it against not only your overarching goals, ambitions, but also an individual campaign level. And fundamentally, what we're doing, if you imagine like a big roulette table, we're telling you where to move your chips around to give you the biggest possible chance of getting the win that you want. And you can define what the win is, whether that's we want to sell more stuff, we want to make more money selling more stuff, we want to hit maximum revenue, we want to hit maximum profitability, we want best return on ad spend, or we want to achieve this particular cost per new customer. So it knows what the constraints are. So once it understands the constraints, it can then go and say, well, actually, all these different campaigns in all these different channels, you need to mix your money up like this. So if you say, right, we've got 200 grand to spend, I don't really care where I spend my £200,000 or dollars, but I've only got £200,000. And off it goes and does that. The potentially a better question is, we need to hit this sales number. And then you reverse engineer it and you go, well, actually, if we need to hit that sales number or that profit number, it can go the other way and go, well, actually, here's how your media mix should look. But that then still needs manually putting into the platforms currently, because we think we need a human in the loop to check. Because there's, yeah, I just think right now, it would be a massive leap if somebody just goes, oh, we've got £200,000 and we just put it in this thing and press the button and it just does it all. But we are not years away from that.
Yeah.
And then the people who were doing that before can go do more strategy, more thinking, more creative, more planning, and think of more interesting things to do.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's definitely confidence. I mean, we have a similar thing with RevLifter. Like we're trying to sort of like going back and forth on how much people would want it to be automated. You could get to the point where it's hands-free. Do you want to? How involved do you want to be? There's a big trust element to it. So it's just, but eventually we should be able to prove, right, that the data is making better decisions than people are going to make with their biases, et cetera.
It's a bit like driverless cars, right? So they've already got the data in California, haven't they, that the driverless cars have less accidents and kill less people than cars with drivers. But people are still nervous about driverless cars. And it is just over time, people get more and more confident with the machines making the decisions when they start seeing it working. And then I suppose what will probably happen in all of this, though, Dan, is then greed will come in. And then the humans will start pushing the machines harder. And then the machine will say, no, we can't do that. And then say, oh, the machine's rubbish. It can't feed my greed. But it's... Yeah, I think you're right. It is about trust and about confidence over time. And I think we need to test and learn. And again, that is quite good, because if you're working with an agency, because lots of different agencies use our tech as well, so they can do more stuff faster. But it's about, oh, we took that recommendation from the clever bit of tech and it worked. Oh, I might take 5 recommendations now. Oh, and they've worked as well. And that takes a while. It's similar with your tech, is people, once they start seeing the results and trust it, they'll go, well, why wouldn't we just do more of it? But then there's probably a point where, although saying that demand changes, economy changes, consumer sentiment changes, so there will always be a place for optimization. I spoke to someone the other day, and they're like, we've finished with our conversion rate optimization. I goes, what do you mean you've finished? And they go, well, we've done it. We know what wins. And I'm like, but surely if that thing won, you should test another thing against that to see if the thing that won before, you could improve it. Because that's, like, going back to the data, the biggest thing we see is people not investing enough in split testing, conversion rate optimization, and people just will spend more. Well, if your conversion rate is 2% and you can get it to 2.5%,
yeah,
right, or even just 2.2%, you get 10% extra sales for no more spent. Surely the amount of money you're investing in the ad platforms, you should be investing a significant percentage of that into improving the conversion rate or improving the checkout process or all the stuff that you guys do. But people are just able to spend their money. And the reason is that's because it's easy.
Yeah.
And the ad platforms make it easy.
Exactly. And I wanted to come specifically onto AI, because you mentioned better and faster. And I'm very keen on, there's a lot of talk obviously about Gen AI as a thing, but I'm very keen on highlighting other use cases for AI that people are less aware of. And I think, forecasting is a great example of this. So AI, does that fit? That fits in terms of making it, processing that data faster, enabling decisions to be made quicker. Is that the best way of understanding what AI is doing in this case?
Yes. I suppose the biggest and easiest way to understand what the AI in our scenario is doing is it's just crunching huge volumes of data against different models and scenarios to pick winners, right? We do have built in some large language model, natural language stuff, so you can ask it questions, because that's how everybody wants to do. What happened yesterday? What should we do tomorrow? Where should we spend our money? Because that is how the world is going. And I don't think people necessarily need more dashboards. They just want more answers or more insight. But historically, we've always had that from a dashboard. So people think they need a different dashboard. But actually, they just want the answer. We do have natural language and LLM type AI. But from our point of view, what we're doing is basically looking back over 2 years worth of historical data, but also looking at, like, I don't know, demand and impression share of your products to work out, well, where's the headroom that we can afford to get based on the budget constraints and everything else. So and I also think we're in a world now, Dan, where everybody just thinks AI is ChatGPT.
Yeah.
Right. And you say that to some of our data scientists and engineers here, and they'd sort of come out in a cold sweat and go, well, hang on, I've been doing AI since I was at university 20 years ago. And this is just a large language model, which is different to AI. It's just one of an AI. So our thing's all about the data. And until recently, a lot of the large language models haven't been very good at data. And that's where we're using the sort of more statistical machine learning type models. And then the output, you can have the output in whichever way you want, or you can, the data's there, and then you can interrogate the data maybe with a large language model to make it prettier and quicker and easier, or talk to it. But our big thing is processing millions of bits of data to make your life easier and faster. To fundamentally, the hypothetical question we're trying to get to is, where should I spend my next pound, dollar, euro?
Yeah.
Is that really the question marketers want to know? Is where's the best place I should spend my next thing? What should I do to achieve my goals?
Yeah, nicely packaged up little bit at the end. And what we like to do at the end, though, as a last thing, is just give people like one practical takeaway, one thing they can go and do straight off the back of watching this, start having a look at, start doing. Have you got something, John, that you could give people to go and have an immediate look at?
What, in AI generally, is something I'm excited about, or something linked to us? Or should I do one of each?
Whichever you would like.
So I'll do some general AI stuff, just if people are listening and haven't played with some of this stuff. Unfortunately, much as I've been beating up Google, I think Google's winning the AI race at the moment. So if you haven't played with the latest Gemini Pro with Nano Banana, or let's say the VO3 video, and I'll give you a practical, realistic example for any retailers listening to this, right? So we worked with a shoe retailer, and they were like, we proved, talking about conversion rate optimization, we were like, well, you need to improve your images. And we think a situational-based image of the pair of shoes in the wild on a real person's legs will sell more shoes. So we did a bit of a test, and pictures of shoes on people's feet on the beach or in a field or on a pavement to sell more shoes. But then they're looking and going, well, we've got 60,000 different pairs of shoes. We haven't got the budget, the time to go and film or photo all these shoes in the real world. Right? Just physically not practical. So, and again, if you'd have asked this question even back just before, I'd have said it's probably not good enough. Whereas we did some testing in this scenario, it was Nano Banana inside Google. And we just uploaded a pair of shoes on a white background. Please put these shoes on somebody walking, man's legs walking down the beach. And you got the shoes, and that is perfect. And we did a test with the actual people of a real
photo shoot versus an AI generated one, and nobody could tell the difference. But then the interesting and exciting thing from a retailer's point of view, we could productionize that. So you could still shoot all your shoes with a white background and all your product images, but then you could add in another step where it just fires all of those with different scenarios. Right, if it's a sandal, put it on these things, or you could randomize the prompt, and then you could suddenly have situation, but then you're going to get better conversion rate. Right, so you're going to make more money quicker. I think you do need to be mindful of the compute cost, because all this AI is not for free. A lot of people suddenly get a massive bill from Gemini or massive costs or the whatever, you've run out of tokens. I got a bit addicted to building something in Lovable and spent about 200 quid in an afternoon. So that's one example of something. And then the other tool I'm loving at the moment, I don't know if you played with it, is Notebook LM. So Notebook, I'm not very good at reading really long documents. Right? So someone sends me something I've got to read, I can just put it into Notebook. It's all a secure environment. It's logged in. It's a paper environment. It generates me a podcast about that document. I can just listen to it in the car. And then I can also talk to it. I can ask it questions. Well, what about this? What's our exposure on this? Or what does that mean? Can you? And then it. But so for me, who's not very good at reading long documents, Notebook LM is great. But I suppose from our point of view of what we're doing is we're just about to launch a Shopify app. So we've sort of been watching the growth of Shopify, and Shopify's coming like this juggernaut. And I think nowadays it's a bit like IBM probably in the 70s and 80s. It's like, why didn't you buy IBM? If you were doing a re-platform now and you're an e-commerce company, you'd probably go, well, why wouldn't we go with Shopify? Because of the ongoing maintenance costs, and if there's an app for this, there's an app for that. So we're just about to launch all our predictive analytics and forecasting tools and benchmarking tools inside Shopify. It's not there yet, so don't go to the App Store and look for it. It's not there yet. It might be there on Monday, depending on when we get approved. But you'll then be able to just, and what it's going to do, which I think is what we were talking about before, Dan, is it's not just going to connect all your marketing data into one place, so your Google, your Meta, and everything else, so you can join all that up. It's also going to create all your products, returns, discounts, stock, inventory. So then hopefully merchandising and marketing can start having a better conversation around, right, actually, which products should we be pushing harder? Which products should we be pulling back on? What were our top 10 bestsellers last week? What actually caused those sales? Or what was our top 10 campaigns, and what actual products did we sell? So stitching all that together and joining all that together is super exciting. So hopefully by the time this is live, someone could go into the Shopify App Store and look for Ask Bosco and press the button and have a free 14-day trial. So we're quite excited about that at the moment.
That is exciting. That's exciting. That's a great whole bunch of things for people to go away and try, which is tremendous. And to wrap us up, John, where can people find you? They can find you on LinkedIn, I assume, pretty easily.
Yeah, John Redman on LinkedIn. I've been on LinkedIn long enough to get John Redman. So yeah, feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn or askbosco.io or modo25.com. And yeah, I'd love to connect with anybody who's interested in what we do.
Fantastic. Well, thank you very much for your time today, John. And
thank you.
Yeah, no worries. And thank you to everybody for watching. And we'll see you next time.
Browse Basket Buy is brought to you by your friends at Revlifter. Promotions work, but they damage brand and margins. Revlifter's intelligent offers drive results by using behavioral signals to target the right customers at the right time. Customers typically see 20% more conversions, 30% higher AOV, 5% more revenue, and a 10% saving on promotional costs. So stop wasting discounts on people who'd buy anyway. Try Revlifter free for 90 days, and they'll handle all the heavy lifting. Visit Revlifter.com to find out more. That's Revlifter.com.